Welcome to the Carlin Laid Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
I'm Sean Carlin.
Now, Sean, we had a very unusual footy season 2020, and the SNFL players actually played for nothing. Are you aware of that?
Well, a little bit from talking to you. I thought they got paid something. I didn't realise they got paid nothing. Yep. You're saying they got paid nothing at all?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know whether JobKeeper came into it, but I would presume not, because these guys are only semi-professional. They actually work in jobs.
Well, that's right. I mean, really, AFL is the only professional football league, yeah. I imagine. But I was looking on a Facebook site that I like, Our Sporting Life SA, which has some interesting stuff on there about, obviously, sport in SA. And they had an article about the salary cap, saying, hang on, the SNFL have cut the salary cap from $400,000 down to $210,000.
Basically halved it.
And the gist of the article was basically saying, well, now it's more attractive for many people to play in community or other leagues, because there was a thought process that after the SNFL made their decision, community associations would make a similar decision, but that hasn't been the case. And in fact, now the person who's written the article, the author, is suggesting and gave some examples that certain clubs could actually be spending more money on their football program than an SNFL club. What are your thoughts about that?
It's been happening for many years, and that's why they brought in salary caps for country clubs and community clubs, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing is, who dictated that the SNFL could have a salary cap of $210,000, and then, to add insult to injury, they're bringing in the power reserves and the close reserves again next year, who will be on their normal wages. So the differential between what those professional teams get paid to play compared to the SNFL, it's woeful. It's not a level playing field, is it?
So who makes that decision? It must go to some council. Is there who are the people at SNFL that make that decision?
Well, my belief is it's a dictate from the AFL. I think the AFL are the controlling body of football in the country nowadays. It's just they're too big for their boots, in my opinion. I mean, they're trying to change the name from Aussie Rules Football to AFL football. Yeah, I see kids in the street telling me they play AFL. Well, gee, how can a 10-year-old kid be playing AFL?
Well, you're playing AFL stands for Australian Football League.
Yeah, it's a competition.
It's a competition. It's not the sport.
No.
It's like, do you say I'm competing in South Australian athletics, or you'd say I'm competing in track and field or athletics? So, I mean, but AFL has become that symbol, hasn't it? And so that's what people use a lot now. I hear kids saying it. Yeah, what sport do you do? AFL.
Yeah.
Rather than footy.
It gets up my nose, because the thing is, whatever happened to the club that you support, whether it's a community club or an SNFL club or an AFL club or whatever. Now, look, growing up, I had my clubs that I supported in community football, which would have been Salisbury and a few others that I had a connection with, that I played with. Central District's always in the SNFL. And I had a couple of clubs I used to like in the old VFL, but North Melbourne were the main one I supported. And then everything changed, and now all the focus is on the AFL, and you have to bow it for the Crows, and you have to do this, and you have to do that, and forget about Central Districts, forget about Salisbury. You know, that seems to be the way of the world with the AFL.
Well, is that just the way things are going? I mean, you know, I'm not having a crack at you for being older, but you're in that older brigade. You've grown up a certain way in terms of your football, as you suggested. But this is a sign of the times, isn't it? So, is SANFL still relevant?
Well,
that's the question that, like, a younger person might ask now, because you say, well, what is the relevance of it? Like, do, for example, the Crows and Power having teams in the SANFL now give it more legitimacy, because they've actually got quality, what people might say are quality players, or playing in that competition? I mean, has an SANFL actually had its day?
Well, an interesting argument. I remember in 2014, when the Crows reserves and Power reserves came into the competition, there was a lot of media saying, oh, but the players love it. They'll be playing against the best and blah, 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 blah. But over the years, when I've interviewed people from various clubs through my work with the football budget, most of them actually don't like the power and clothes coming into the competition because it sort of almost they have an easy game because they're under strength or they have an impossible game. And I've seen that when just with Central District. Sometimes Central, it's a walk in the park because they've only got 8 AFL players in the side or they've got 15, 16, 17 AFL players and we haven't got a chance. So it's sort of that inconsistency. I mean, if it was a balance of, say, no more than 12 AFL players, maybe then the balance would be a bit better as long as other conditions were in place that they couldn't take any of the required league players from other clubs.
So $210,000. It seems like a lot of money, but when you're thinking, okay, let's say 22 players in a team, it's not a lot. And then does like the payments for coaches come under the salary cap? Is that a separate thing?
Well, I'm not 100% sure on this, Sean, but I just know that with the SNFL, there are other items that are included in the salary cap, whereas with community football, amateur football or country football, they have a lot of existing exemption, things like private health, meal allowance, apparel, representative footy payments, game payments, playing coach payments. And I know a lot of clubs specifically go for a good player as a coach so that they can pay more. There's travel allowances. A lot of these aren't taken into consideration for the SNFL, and I think that's what the argument of the article was, that the community football, in effect, could actually be paying more than an SNFL club, even though that would be a rare occasion.
And, like, it's one thing to say, okay, a community club could now theoretically pay more money for their program than SNFL club can. But are there that many clubs out there, community clubs out there, who could afford to do that? I imagine that they are playing their marquee players and players that they're bringing in, let's call them imports, if they're coming into the community to play just to play football. But I imagine they're not paying their local guys as much.
Well,
so are clubs really out there that can spend, you know, over $200,000 a year and still survive?
The thing is, it's a lot easier for a community club or a country club to sort of play around with the rules a little bit. Things like, this guy, he's a local guy because his address is in this area, but he may not be. You know, there's been plenty of situations like that. I know one club in country footy thought they'd get around the rules by having two coaches. Two top players came to coach, but they were caught out on that one, so they couldn't get away with that payment. But, you know,
that's their scenarios where they're manipulating the rules, regulations to make themselves more competitive. But my question was, can clubs, I can't imagine there's many clubs like country clubs, community clubs, even maybe metro clubs that, you know, in playing that can say, hey, we've got enough money to be able to put over $200,000 for our senior program.
Well, you know, there are some clubs that are really successful in raising money. If they've got pokies or the like, community clubs can have the potential to raise more money than an SNFL club. So in those circumstances, they can. I know of some country clubs which go around in cycles and they're near the bottom all the time, but then all of a sudden they have a rush of success. They put money into that success and usually they are successful in pulling off a premiership once every 10 years or whatever. So, yeah, you know, horses for courses. There's clubs that are consistently good that win their share of premierships as well, but they're normally the ones with the richest sponsors, people that are in the club that own businesses and used to play for the club. You know, there's those types of scenarios. There's a whole range of different scenarios, but I think the positive for community clubs and country clubs is they haven't lost their standing in the whole tree of football, whereas the SNFL have. The SNFL have been watered down with the inclusion of the Power and the Crows reserves teams. And look, I had this argument with someone recently, one of the people in the SNFL, and I said, look, I often go out when I watch Central District games. I go out and watch the a lot of the second half of the reserves, and I want to see certain players, young players coming up, seeing how they're going to, you know, how well suited they are for league footy, for Centrals. At the end of the day, if they lose, win, whatever, it doesn't really bother me because I'm more interested in how they're going to top up the league players and put pressure on the league players so the league team can play better. I mean, if the reserves win a premiership, well, that's all well and good. I'll be happy. But if the reserves lost by 20 goals and the league won by 1 point, I'd be happy. If the reserves won by 30 goals and the league lost by 1 point, I'd be unhappy. So
what's the purpose now of the SANFL? Because in the past, it might have been, hey, that was the highest level that someone could play apart from then moving into the, like getting picked up by a VFL club, which we saw back in the day. We had our superstars here and we had that rivalry with the VFL.
Which started in the 1980s.
Yeah, and then people go, I'll play. Everyone recognised the VFL as a better competition, a stronger competition. And then we went national. So we've got the AFL competition, and that obviously was maybe the beginning of the decline of state leagues like SANFL and so on. But so now, like, kids are getting drafted, obviously, and they might not even play a league game. Like, they're playing, obviously, sometimes for their school. They're playing in the junior competitions. They might be playing reserves, maybe playing in the adult league. But clubs are looking beyond that, aren't they? So you go, okay, well, do you really have to go to SANFL league to be drafted? And maybe the answer is no. So then you go, okay, well, if the competition is not as strong as it has been, what is going to draw players to it? You would have clearly gone thinking, my thinking would be AFL, SANFL, then your local community leagues. But is that changing? Is it becoming like it's almost, it doesn't matter, you've got AFL and then you're going to play for where you can either make the most money or enjoy your footy?
I think that's a little simplistic because at the end of the day, a lot of the guys that get drafted do come through league clubs. A lot of them, young Hatley, played a few league games, half a season for Centrals before he went. So that's where they get tested. And a lot of those kids from college are encouraged to go out to their local SANFL club. So
I'm not saying not go to their SANFL club, but in terms of them playing league, if they're playing in the, you know, the 18s comp or they're playing in reserves and so on, they're gone. Good players are gone before they get to an age where they're going to play a lot of league games.
But that's happened forever anyhow, because I remember just with Central Districts, Butler never played league football with Central Districts before he went to West Coast. Luke McCabe played under 17s and under 90s for Centrals. He went to Hawthorn.
Yeah, so my question then, what's the attraction then? If I'm a young bloke and I know I'm going through the SANFL ranks and I'm one of the best players going around, I'm going to be picked up in all those programs, I'm going to be gone before I get a chance to play league footy. Okay, so what's the attraction then for a bloke who's in his 23, 24? I can go and make more money over here. And I can actually train a couple of nights a week and really enjoy my footy and make more money out of it than I could be over here playing in SANFL, training a lot, doing a lot of training and not getting rewarded for it. And it's like, that's why I can't get the, why did they make that decision? Because you're asking these guys to do a lot more and commit a lot more than a guy in a community club.
I don't think that's
And yet you're not rewarding
is.
Them.
I don't think that's where the problem is in the younger guys, because the younger guys thrive on the extra work. The ones that make it thrive on that extra work, so they're going to be attracted to league clubs as it is. The big problem I foresee is with the country clubs pinching those 25 to 30-year-olds. The ones that are past the possibly breaking into the AFL, they're the ones that are the glue that keep the SANFL together. Those good players in that age group are the ones that foster the goodwill with the youngsters to continue playing
so
in the league.
Shouldn't they get rewarded? Shouldn't SANFL be rewarding them?
They should. Maybe the AFL should put money into that as well, but they're not. They're so hell-bent on popping up Queensland and Sydney football. You know, the state that's suffered the most from this is Tasmania. It's really died over there because there's no money going into it. You can see similar type action with Western Australia and South Australia now. I mean, probably what the AFL wants to do is kill off second-tier football and just have a whole pool. But I don't think they realise if you have that, there's going to be a little bit of misdirection in clubs for those young superstars coming up. And in fact, whereas a lot of clubs see their talented kids and push them towards an SNFL club, now they'll want to sort of get the benefit of them at their own club to make their own money. So there could be some negatives in that.
It seems like a bit of a mess. And what I would like you to do, Rob, is find out who actually made this decision. I think we should keep talking about this because it just doesn't make sense to me. And I would like to know who's responsible. Is it the AFL or is it the SANFL actually making these decisions? So you're the man to find out.
All right. Well, we'll put that on the agenda for the near future. So ends another Carlin Low Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
I'm John Carlin.